In other words, there has to be consideration. You can't just give a share without consideration back. Now, you can pay money, that's consideration. And in the case of the family, if let's say there's a sister and son-in-law on the ranch, and a son who's a lawyer in town, that are going to become part of the gifting plan associated with this corporation. The sister and her husband are working on the ranch. Those are services to the corporation that are in consideration. What about the lawyer in town? Let's say he's an insurance broker or something like that. His consideration for participation in the corporation and getting the stock share could be as little as participating in the meeting every year as a shareholder or an officer of that corporation. But this goes to the wise thing. You better do it by the book. You better keep the books. You better have the annual meeting. You better be able to prove that the real estate agent in town, son, has been contributing for his share of the corporation. And I say that with collaboration just to point out that these things are complicated and they really have to work through. But you can do what I said in answer to your question.
This reminds me of a story that I was sitting in the sale barn with my uncle. There's a pretty good cattle feeder. And I was telling him, we're so blind this year, we just had Christmas with our kids and grandkids this last Sunday. And he says, well, we set up a couple of liability companies for our kids, we had them on Christmas Eve, so we all sit together. That's the first part. You do have to do it through your paperwork. Yes, sir?
If you have a C corporation and you want to give a lot of that stock away to your sons, daughters, in laws, whatever, is there a good way to retain control of that company once you reduce your stock? Your share numbers.
I was fishing in Alaska.
Did you get it?
The question is, if you got a C corporation, want to give part of it away?
The majority of the stock away.
Okay. Is there a good way to keep control? While Joe's thinking there, you can keep some management controls, sometimes set up two shares of stock, and you can do that with a C corporation, not with a subchapter S corporation. You could do that with a limited liability company.
It's a C corporation. It has been a C corporation since the early 1900s. The changes it was kind of involved.
It's very involved, and that's one of the problems with C corporation. One of the companies, we get a little lot of Tyson. Is on the New York Stock Exchange, they've got two kinds of stock. Stock I bought on the stock exchange is one thing, but what the Tyson family has is open, so they're technically run the company. The other thing is when you give that, it's good to do some appraisals of the company, some appraisals of the stock. Now, you've got a lot of flexibility in how much you value that stock on. I mean, if it's a minority share, it's not worth as much as a majority share. But the more substantive people are keeping the book behind that transaction, the better. Joe, can you answer this?
One thought is always to figure out a way to be elected president. Maybe within a family there might be some political lobbying that has to be done to do that. This is a great question because it illustrates that there are no silver bullets in this field. There, for every answer to a question or solution to one family's problem, within that situation or that answer or that solution, there's going to be some pitfalls. That's the best I can do. And I kind of thought I'd come to King Sam and slash backwards.
Sorry that I interrupted you, but is this the answer with the voting on vote?
Yeah, it's pretty complicated.
You just don't change all your stuff.
And a C corporation, you're not, that would really mess up a subject of S corporation. One of the don't be afraid to set up a sister company to run part of the business or have some of that land. You know, one thing I want to mention, one of the smartest school boys I know this year did something that was really interesting. First he had to be in a business with somebody else, and he said, I don't want to leave that problem with my kids. I mean, and that's the point we want to make to you today. If you've got some problem property, problem business, and you're the guy that's been running it, it might be a good time to take care of it. The other thing that this gentleman did is he went ahead and took his basis and paid 15% on the gain. Probably the 15% capital gains rate right now is the cheapest tax you'll ever pay. You know, nobody really wants to pay tax, but if you can sell $1 million, you know, get $1 million increase in basis from $150,000 in tax, that may be an awfully good deal. Because I'll bet you some of these people run for office and they're going to raise that rate. So just keep that in mind. That's one of the things we said yesterday.
You mentioned on a trust where on the death of one, the surviving spouse can in fact use that their trust to generate income. Is that money then upon the death of the second spouse taxed at the second spouse? Is that included in the money that was generated out of the death of the first one? Income from that property or asset, is that taxed or included in the?
Okay, that's a good point. The basic trust principle. What was it, a marital deduction trust or a Q-tip trust? That sits there and generates income. That would not be federal state tax taxed to the second in the second person's debt. The income that was made in for example, she accumulated in her estate would be taxed.
But the first one wouldn't be. Money from that person's tax.
That's correct.
You addressed even life insurance is a major non-cross-off.
Now, there's a complicated question. But life insurance is a good tool sometimes. It's a particularly good tool, you know, when you're young. And to Joey's point, let me kind of back that up. You need a will and estate plan, even if you don't have a whole lot of money, and even if you're young. Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, they don't need estate plans. They have plans when they pay the taxes. It doesn't matter how much it is, they'll have it. But if you got young kids, if you had young kids, you want to sometimes vote for them. You want to make sure you've got the right person that's their guardian who takes care of them. You want to leave them some directions, Maybe you want them to go to a certain college. But often in that time, you might want to fund the money to take care of those kids. And in that case, life insurance, I'd get the cheapest. Life insurance, there's a lot of what they call split dollar policies, which sometimes make a lot of work for lawyers. It's a way to buy a partner out of the business. They work pretty well. But as people get older, those policies tend to get to be real expensive. And if somebody's got a big policy on a guy that's not getting along with him anymore, that isn't necessarily a good deal. As you get older, it gets pricier. He's going to have a kidney transplant next week. And do you keep that policy in effect or don't you? It's a tough decision. But life insurance is another tool. It can be used.
The
I agree that life insurance is a very good tool. It should be considered in any discussions about substantial estate. But here's the kicker. Whatever the value of that insurance policy is upon the death of the insurer is valued in the state. So make sure that doesn't kick you over into an unexempt situation, number one. Number two, if that's the vehicle that is being used to help pay potential estate taxes, the premiums could be substantial. And it could be a big drain on an operation. The operation is trying to pay for that policy. Be careful, because you could get into a situation where the cash flow is a problem. So, yes, it's a good tool, but watch it. And don't go to a seminar. I'm in trouble by it, but I'm sure it's before I walk out of here. I probably will show you. Don't go to a state seminar, put on my insurance agent, walk out of there and pay for the policy. Please.
Now, ownership, though, isn't one of the things who owns the policy. If another family has your insurance policy and it's not part of your estate, it always depends on who pays the premium. Determines
you know, it's not necessarily who pays the premium, it's who has ownership of the policy. And who the beneficiary is. Now, many life insurance policies that are purchased, you know, for the benefit of your wife and your kids, they're not taxable as your estate. But if you have a policy, let's say you have a policy to cover your own demands, that's payable to your estate. That will get thrown into your estate.
Yeah, but if you've got a $500,000 life insurance policy and your wife owns it, it's not part of your estate, correct?
Correct. Who's the beneficiary?
Cheese.
Because
my dog.
That's the idea, too. That is a really good question, too. Can you use the appropriate settlement to force the kids to get along and divide the estate? That's been tried a hundred times. And the fact of the matter is, you can use the probate to divide the estate. There may not be anything you can do to make the kids get along. One of the famous probation cases of Coke Industries in Kansas, Wichita, and you're talking about millions, I don't know how much money, but the second biggest private company in the country, had an interesting provision in there in the will, that whoever fought this will got penalized if he lost and had to pay the cost. They still had a very big fight, it was all over the Wichita papers for months, you know. But he lost and got penalized. Probate procedures in some cases, and that's why that's a good point. Well, in some cases, it will end the problem. You know, brother and sister may not get along, and maybe there's nothing good that can get along. And the other thing that makes some of these things a little bit difficult is blended families, or second families, new wives, new husbands, all those things. Divorces. You just pretty much got to try to tailor it to the individual situation. But you couldn't take my probate. Probate works a lot of advantage, you know, those are different deals. You pay the debts, you distribute the money, and that's it. You get a court order, if they don't fight it at the time, it's done.
They have an opportunity to come back and spread. I've already seen where they had a multi-year
different sections of the estate, land, property, and land. We don't want to, we're trying to avoid the situation that that model is better, like you better than me.
Sure.
And,
sure.
Son, rather than son-in-law, it's a complication. You see the kids lining up right now. Start a vital fashion.
The key thing is to think of that. And you're forcing it from the department, you know. And that happens, you know. Ben likes it better than me. I say, don't.
Let me add these points.
Go ahead.
That's what I'm saying. But this raises a pretty interesting point in my mind. And that is, I've seen both ways this work. I've seen where the testator, the person who's setting up the estate plan, do it all by themselves. Just them and the attorney and the accountant to set it up, nail it into the wall, and that was it. Whether it was an irrevocable trust, or we talked a little bit of this in 95 about a couple of these things, where the testator was the trustor, set up the trust, became a trustee during his lifetime, and then the beneficiaries were the kids. But he didn't tell anybody what he was going to do. And then I've seen it where the basic outline of the plan is created, and then there's a family sit down and talk about it. I appointed the name of my oldest daughter as the successor trustee of this irrevocable trust. And here's the reason. She's living on the ranch. She's got a law degree. Her husband is working on the ranch. Their kids are working on the ranch. She knows more about the ranch than the kids are living in town. Now, she's got a portion of the proceeds of this estate, but the daughter is going to be the successor trustee. But that trust can last indefinitely. It should, but it can't. So, it does raise an interesting question. How much involvement your family should be, how much they should be involved in this estate planning process? And that obviously depends upon the family and your relationships within that family. And so we can't answer that question today, and we'll question you if we try. But it is something that you should think of. When you're going to your lawyer, one of the main things, other than some of these technical things we're talking about, is the relationship question. What issues does that raise? So I think it's a very important part of this. You should definitely pose a question back there.
Just switching gears just a little bit about long-term health care, and regardless of age, how do you feel about that?
Well, there's a place where you might consider some insurance, some long-term health care or nursing care insurance. Because, I'll tell you an interesting thing that I've followed over the years. You know, you see these figures about how much percent food costs the family, and there's other figures about how much health costs the family. And those numbers have kind of been interchanging. It used to be that you spent 5% for medicine and 25% food, but now we're about like 8% for food, 22% for medicine. I mean, health costs are severe, and in certain cases there, and I don't know the answer, but maybe the answer is to make sure you've got a long-term health insurance policy or a long-term, maybe a nursing home policy. Because your property, under a Medicaid scheme or under, even if you go to the emergency room and run up a huge health bill, that puts your property at risk. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I think you implied earlier, correct me if I'm wrong, that if you put property or estate into a life estate trust protected after 5 years from a Medicaid attachment?
Yeah. Now, I know that's in Iowa. You know, I mean, most states are different, but in Iowa, if you transfer property to your kids through a gift or some, maybe you contract with them at a fairly low price, after 5 years, you're pretty much okay.
Yeah, that's been an assumption. We did this 8 years ago, and the same lawyer and social service person that told us to do it told us last month that that law has been revoked, and they can now attach.
For how many years?
Forever. They have this chart for up to 100 years of age. Like, my mother's 83 now, and they said they have to come up with 200,000.
And those men have
had it for 8 years. But in November, you said they passed a law in November.
Is that
state or federal?
I don't
know.
I actually heard that same thing when I did my taxes this year, so that's why I asked the question.
Well, and this can make life very complicated. And, you know, this is a good thing to talk about, but one thing is really good, for example, in your overall planning would be to maybe sell a farm or ranch to one of the kids. And you sell it to them at a reasonable price, a reasonable rate of interest, and they are paying you and they are getting ownership. But there's always a chance that some IRS or, you know, Medicaid bureaucrat might come in and say, well, you sold that